You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring The Smitten Kitchen and the Mayo Clinic. From The Smitten Kitchen, lemon risotto. I hate clutter. You might think that this means that I live a type A sort of white glove test-passing existence, but anyone who knows me can vouch wholeheartedly that I do not, because I'm lazy. But every so often, 28 days or so, I go on a cleaning bender and purge and sweep to my heart's content. My inboxes get bit literate, absurdly insignificant things get vacuumed, dusty ledge around the walls of the apartment, your days are numbered, and things cluttered in this ever-expanding document called To Blog get purged, well, onto your screens. I've gotten especially behind this month, so I hope you don't mind that I dump 5 ideas onto you and then move on to what I really want to talk about, this new awesome thing that rhymes with Nacro and Nens. Sad but true, this entry is the equivalent of bartering 2 more bites of broccoli at the dinner table to ensure that you can get a scoop of Breyer's Neapolitan for dessert. But like the brown, white, and pink stuff Stripe always was, I'll try to make it completely worth it in the end. Number 1, that 70s salad. The mandoline and I are getting along famously. I love it, it loves me, and sometimes we giggle together over those dark days before we were together and chopping things involved a knife and a cutting board. It was only a matter of time before I made an entire salad with it, like this one with slivered radishes, cucumber, scallions, celery, and fresh cranberry beans, topped with a Dijon vinaigrette. It was terrifically fun to make, but for some reason, the arrangement on the platter reminded me precisely of a 1970s dinner party, though I couldn't figure out why. All right, wife swap was on. Number 2, lemon risotto. I made this several weeks ago, and it's fantastic in every way. There are a few more awesome beddings for meat, but especially seafood, than this bright and simple risotto. You won't believe how much flavor you can get out of the simplest ingredients. We served it alongside skinny asparagus that had been roasted to a crisp with flaky sea salt and olive oil, seared fatty scallops with coins of garlic that had been topped with, number 3, arugula pesto. After finding ourselves with a ridiculous amount of fresh, sharp arugula in the fridge and no immediate desire to make a salad, I made a quick pesto with it, with the usual ingredients, olive oil, toasted pine nuts, Parmesan, and salt. And while it was great, I'm not sure I fell for the intense bitterness. Alex and our friends loved it with the scallops, but I'm not convinced they weren't being nice. That doesn't leave you with much in the way of advice, but I think it's worth a try, perhaps with just a handful of arugula to see if it's your thing before moving on to a massive batch. Number 4. Spinach salad with couscous. This, my friends, I'm sorry to say, is a dud. I made it along with that lemon tart to bring to a dinner party last Friday, and wow, was I not pleased with its egregiously flat and excessive raw green taste. So we finally dumped a cup of crumbled feta on it, which helped, but mostly I'm just telling you about this because I tried it, and so now you don't have to. I hear a lot of good things about Patricia Wells, but I'm going to have to wait a while before I give her a chance to redeem herself. Any bets on this? Number 5, Campari cocktail. Ooh boy, I have fallen so hard for Campari. It's practically all I can talk about. I had a Campari cocktail for the first time at Cook Shop several weeks ago, and while my first reaction was, damn, that's harsh, my second was, predictably, I must have more. What I find unbelievably refreshing about it is the bitterness, followed by that fantastic garnet hue. In the world of cocktails, there's tart, there's sour, there's even a little bit spicy, but mostly there's way, way, way too much sweet. This is the opposite in every way. There are a lot of fancy recipes out there for Campari cocktails, all of which look fantastic, But our at-home simple one has been ice cubes, a quarter glass of Campari, mostly filled with seltzer, followed by a short glug of sweet vermouth, and a longer one of grapefruit juice. Yeah, I know that's not much of a recipe, but I promise it works. And if you'll excuse me at 10 p.m. and I haven't had one yet, this must be immediately addressed. Here's the recipe for the good recipe I talked about, the lemon risotto. This is adapted from Bon Appetit, May of 2002. This makes the 6 first course or 4 main course servings. You'll need 6 cups of canned low-salt chicken broth, 3.5 tablespoons of butter, 1.5 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 large shallots chopped, 2 cups of arborio rice or medium grain white rice, 1 quarter cup of dry white wine, 1 cup of freshly grated Parmesan cheese, that's about 3 ounces, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley, 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, and 4 teaspoons of grated lemon peel. Bring the broth to a simmer in a large saucepan over medium heat. Reduce the heat to low and keep cover to keep warm. Melt 1.5 tablespoons of butter with oil in a heavy large saucepan over medium heat. Add shallots and saute until tender, about 6 minutes. Add rice and stir 1 minute. Add wine and stir until evaporated, about 30 seconds. Add 1.5 cups of hot broth, simmer until absorbed, stirring frequently. Add the remaining broth 1/2 cup at a time, allowing the broth to be absorbed, before adding more and stirring frequently until the rice is creamy and tender, about 35 minutes. Stir in cheese and the remaining 2 tablespoons of butter, and then stir in the parsley, lemon juice, and lemon peel. Season the risotto with salt and pepper and transfer to a bowl and serve. Next recipe sounds like it's just out of season, but I just love pumpkin. Pumpkin muffins. See, now I'm a girl who keeps my promises, eh? About everything but picking up the dry cleaning, at least. As I expected, these pumpkin muffins were a cinch, which is good because I expect that from my muffins. They should max out at 2 bowls for prep. You should be able to mix them by hand, and there shouldn't be any excessively difficult steps. It's not rocket science. This recipe was all of that, plus I discovered something. You know how they always say not to overmix muffins? A large wire whisk, when mixing by hand, really allows you to incorporate all of the drying ingredients quickly without mashing them up too much. It's made it much harder to overdo it, despite my better efforts. And now the part where I'm a moron, because what entry would be complete without a little self-deprecation? Evidence the first. The recipe calls for a solid pack pumpkin puree. What did I buy? Pumpkin pie filling. You know, the stuff doctored up with sugar and spices and some crap with a lot of letters. In my first attempt at the batter, I had already mixed the sugar with the eggs and oil, so when I realized that the pumpkin already had enough sugar, so I dumped it. Please don't ask where, because the state of our kitchen drain is unappetizing at best. But then it turned out that maybe the pumpkin pie filling didn't have enough sugar. But at this point, even the second I had run out of sugar, it baffled me too. The muffins could use some more, both sugar and spice, which was, by the way, the other thing that I skipped, assuming the pie filling had enough. Well, not enough for my taste. So despite my every attempt to wreck them, they are a good pumpkin muffin worthy of your palate. I can't attest to whether the actual recipe, should you follow it, contains the correct amount of sugar or spice for already cited reasons, but who doesn't adjust those things to taste anyway? The sprinkling of cinnamon sugar on top gave it a nice crisp on top when it came out of the oven, though unsurprisingly it was somewhat softened by the time I took the better lit pictures this morning. Finally, in case you thought I was joking about my unbridled fervor over the new gourmet issue yesterday, I offer up this evidence, and this excludes the ones I determined that were too much of a calorie heft for a weekday night, but I'm saving those for later. Here's the recipe, pumpkin muffins adapted from the American Club in Kohler, Wisconsin, via Gourmet Magazine. New favorite adaptation as of October 28th of 13 is sweet potato muffins. Ooh. Roast a medium to large orange fleshed sweet potato pricked all over with a fork at 350 for 400 minutes, or excuse me, 350 degrees for 45 minutes to an hour until very tender. Let cool completely. You can do this a day in advance and store it in the fridge. Either mash or run potato flesh through a potato ricer and then measure 1.5 cups from this and continue with the recipe below as printed. So you'll need 1.5 cups of all-purpose flour. I have successfully swapped whole wheat flour for half of this. 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon table salt, 1 teaspoon of pumpkin pie spice or 1/2 teaspoon cinnamon, plus 1/4 teaspoon of fresh nutmeg, plus 1/4 teaspoon ginger, plus a pinch of ground cloves and allspice. And then 1 cup, that was the original recipe, to 1/3 cup, what I use these days, makes it even more rich, of canned solid pack pumpkin. This is from a 15-ounce can, not pumpkin pie filling, which is sweetened and spiced. 1/3 cup of vegetable or another neutral cooking oil, 2 large eggs, 1 1/4 cup plus 1 tablespoon of granulated sugar, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon. You're going to heat the oven to 350 degrees, put liners in 12 standard sized muffin cups, stir or whisk together flour, baking powder, baking soda, salt, and spice in a small medium bowl. In a larger bowl, whisk together the pumpkin, oil, eggs, and 1 1/4 cups of sugar. Add dry ingredients to the wet and stir until just combined, and then divide the batter among muffin cups. Make them each about 3/4 full. Stir together the last tablespoon of sugar and teaspoon of cinnamon and sprinkle over each muffin. Bake until puffed and golden brown, and a wooden pick or skewer inserted into the center of a muffin comes out clean. It'll be about 25 to 30 minutes. Cool in the pan on a rack 5 minutes, and then transfer the muffins from pan to rack and cool to warm or room temperature. As far as doing ahead, most muffins don't keep well, but these are excellent on day 2 after being stored in an airtight container at room temperature, and not bad at all on day 3. If longer, I would keep them in the freezer until needed. Let's jump right to our Mayo Clinic recipe, just to make sure we get the really super healthy one in there. This one for green smoothie. The dietitian's tip says this refreshing drink is an excellent source of vitamins A and C. Really simple. For the ingredients, you'll need 1 banana, juice of 1 lemon, that's about 4 tablespoons, 1/2 cup strawberries, 1/2 cup of other berries such as blackberries or blueberries, 2 ounces of fresh raw baby spinach, that's about 2 cups, fresh mint to taste, and 1 cup cold water or ice. You place all the ingredients in a blender or a juicer and puree, and then enjoy. Thank you, Mayo Clinic. Next recipe, just to balance that out, is going to be potato and artichoke tortilla from the Smitten Kitchen. Everyone has a different idea what constitutes eating healthy, or at the very least, in a manner that diametrically opposes the Thanksgiving through New Year's gluttony. Some people eschew meat. For others, it's just red meat. Some give up cheese or bread or fat or potatoes. I mean, you name it. There's a diet out there that promises that swearing it off is the answer to thin thighs in 30 days, or you in a white bikini in the Bahamas in 56 days. You know, just to throw out a totally arbitrary example. I am realizing increasingly that I belong to no dieting camp whatsoever. I mean, I consider things like portion size all the time, and if I had meat in one meal, making sure that the next one avoids it, but I don't think that there is a magical evil food that when crossed off your menu will make pounds vanish from your hips. But really, I didn't mean to talk about dieting. What I meant to do was to get to the fact that this here, a potato, some eggs, and vegetables cooked in olive oil and served in wedges with a salad, is the very definition of the kind of food I like to hone in on when I'm coming off of weeks of eating well beyond my recommended daily intake of cheese and butter and chocolate. Here's the recipe for a potato tortilla with artichokes and red peppers. This from the New Spanish Table. It's been way too long since I made my last tortilla, and if you're looking for the classic version, start there, and there's a link at smittenkitchen.com. This version was devised by a friend of the author's to use up leftover boiled potatoes. Although not traditional, with that long sauté in olive oil and including red peppers and artichokes, it's no less delicious. This serves 6 to 8 as a tapa or 2 as a light main dish. You'll need about 4 tablespoons of olive oil, plus more if needed. 1/2 of a medium-sized onion, quartered and thinly sliced. 1 large boiled Yukon Gold potato, quartered and thinly sliced. A leftover potato works great here. 3 marinated artichoke hearts from a can or a jar, rinsed and patted dry and then thinly sliced. 1/4 cup of sliced piquillo peppers or roasted red bell peppers, and 4 large, very fresh eggs, preferably organic, 2 tablespoons of chicken stock or broth, and coarse salt, kosher or sea salt. First, you're going to heat 2 tablespoons of the olive oil in a medium-sized skillet over medium heat. Add the onion and cook until limp but not brown, about 3 to 5 minutes. Add the potato and cook, stirring gently for 5 minutes. Stir in the artichokes and peppers to cook, stirring for another 2 to 3 minutes. Using a slotted spoon, transfer the vegetable mixture to a bowl and let cool completely. Next, you're going to place the eggs, chicken stock, and a few small pinches of salt in a medium-sized bowl and beat until just scrambled. Add the potato mixture and mix until well combined, and then let stand for about 10 minutes. Heat 5 teaspoons of the reserved olive oil in a heavy 8-inch skillet, preferably nonstick, over medium-high heat until it is just beginning to smoke. Pour the egg mixture into the skillet and flatten the potatoes with a spatula until the top is fairly even, and then reduce the heat to medium-low. Cook, moving and shaking the skillet, running a thin spatula around the edge and sliding it into the middle so that some of the egg runs under for about 1 minute, and then let it cook undisturbed until the top is a little wet but not liquid, about 6 to 8 minutes. Next, you're going to run the thin spatula under the tortilla to make sure that no part of the bottom is stuck to the skillet. And then top the skillet with a rimless plate slightly larger than the skillet, and using oven mitts, quickly invert the tortilla onto the plate. If the skillet looks dry, add a little more olive oil, and then carefully slide the tortilla back into the skillet, uncooked side down. Shake the skillet to straighten the tortilla and push the edges in with the spatula, and then reduce the heat to very low, and cook the tortilla until a toothpick inserted in the center comes out dry. It'll be about 3 to 4 minutes. Invert the tortilla again as before to cook on the first side for another minute. Invert the tortilla onto a serving plate and pat the top with a paper towel to get rid of excess oil. Let it cool a little and then cut the tortilla into wedges and serve warm or at room temperature. To serve as a tapa, cut the tortilla into squares and serve with toothpicks. That sounds like a fun recipe. Next, we're going to move all the way to the northeastern part of the United States and a recipe for lobster rolls. Alex and I have kind of a thing for Maine after going to Portland a few years ago and becoming instantly smitten. The weathered barns, the hand-painted signs, wild blueberries, and, well, you know, lobster aplenty. And so, with our anniversary approaching and the looming deadline of baby, 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 we decided to head back to Kennebunkport for a long weekend later this month. Except somewhere along the way, I got really, really pregnant. Funny how those things happen. I mean, like super pregs, and I mean staggering bursts of productivity. The doorways have been detailed, followed by 4-hour recovery periods. This whole upright thing is exhausting. And suddenly the thought of a 6-hour drive each way, a mere 3 weeks before a due date that I'm not buying, seemed ill-planned. Thus, we've decided to postpone our trip until a hopefully less waddlesome time. But I promise this wasn't supposed to be a bummer of a story. To celebrate old man Alex's 35th birthday, it seemed only fitting that if we couldn't bring ourselves to Maine, we'd simply lure it back here. I turned to Rebecca Charles, she of the Pearl Oyster Bar in the village, lobster rolls and blueberry pie, for inspiration. And oh, this is a great one for people who share our Maine crush. In it, Charles recounts her family's summer trips to New England, the roots of her obsession with their summery fare, and of course, tartar salad. And she bears the secret to her lobster rolls, the ones that put them on the New York map, heaps the freshest shellfish, and barely any clutter from extra ingredients, all on a buttery toasted bun. Along with a blueberry slab pie, pasta salad, potato salad, wheels of buttered bicolor corn, and enough delicious beer to make this temporarily sober girl weep with envy, we couldn't put out these miniature lobster rolls fast enough at Alex's birthday party over the weekend. And can I heartily recommend that you have your own Maine party this summer? It was so much more fun than gathering in a bar or a poorly lit restaurant, and it wasn't a half bad consolation prize for missing out on the real deal this summer. Here's the recipe for lobster rolls, adapted from Lobster Rolls and Blueberry Pie. The secret to this lobster salad roll is the lack of clutter. Just a smidgen of lemon, celery, chives, and mayo to heaps of fresh chunked lobster meat. This is also what makes it such a hit. Once you've gone through all of that effort and/or expense to get good lobsters, why hide their taste? Yield. At the Pearl Oyster Bar, they use this recipe to make 2 lobster rolls, which are served on toasted hot dog buns. We used it to make 64 miniature rolls from a double batch of light brioche burger buns. Each bun can be made from just about an ounce of dough, and the buns will be a quarter the size of the regular recipe. For this, you'll need 2 pounds of cooked lobster meat, chopped roughly into 1/2 and 3/4 inch pieces, a small celery rib, finely chopped, 1/4 cup of mayonnaise, Charles insists on Hellman's, I didn't argue, squeeze or two of lemon juice, pinch of kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper, 2 top-loading hot dog buns or 64 miniature burger buns, as described above, or small dinner rolls, unsalted butter, snipped fresh chives for garnish, though we mixed ours right into the salad for convenience. In a large bowl, combine the lobster meat, celery, mayonnaise, lemon and salt, and pepper, and mix thoroughly, and adjust the seasonings to taste. As far as doing ahead, cover the mixture and stir in the refrigerator until ready to serve. It will last for up to 2 days. Now, how they prepare the buns at the restaurant? In a small saute pan over low to medium heat, you're going to melt 2 teaspoons of butter, place the hot dog buns on their sides in the butter, and then flip the buns a couple of times so that both sides soak up an equal amount of butter and they brown evenly, and then remove the buns from the pan and place them on a large plate. Fill the toasted buns with the lobster salad. Now, how we prepared our miniature rolls? On large roasting pans, we split each of our rolls and lightly toasted them, open side up, before quickly slathering both sides with butter and filling each with a generous tablespoon of lobster salad. Sprinkle your rolls with chives and serve with a salad, slaw, or shoestring fries. We bought our lobster meat cooked that morning and shelled from the lobster place, for those of you who are going to ask. However, not all markets are as trustworthy when it comes to lobster meat, and they label fresh. It's often overcooked and not as recently rendered as they promise. If you're up for it, cooking and cracking your own will ensure freshness while reducing your grocery tab. About 20% of the weight of the lobster is its meat, so you would need, for example, 5 1-pound lobsters to get 1 pound of meat. Don't panic, as I did, when you see how the tiny mass of 2 pounds of lobster meat might look. Once diced, our salad nearly filled a 6-cup bowl. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.